What's going on? Welcome back to another episode of MLB The Showcast. I'm, of course, your host, Adam, or What the Moose, back again with my brother, Aaron. How's it going, Aaron?
Doing well. How are you?
I'm fantastic. We finally got our first couple developer streams for MLB The Show 19, and I could not be more excited to break them down and get right into it. So let's hop right in. What do you say?
Let's do it.
All right. So the biggest piece of information, at least from a Diamond Dynasty perspective, from these two streams, at least in my opinion, is probably the Legends. What do you think about that?
I think so too. Just from a pure like Diamond Dynasty content, what we'd see, setting aside gameplay for a second, the only bit of Diamond Dynasty content news we got are the two new Legends they dropped. Who are they?
So we got in the first stream, which was the fielding stream, which we'll get to in a little bit. That would be Jimmy Fox, crazy power hitter. We'll get into him in a little bit. And the other one, you want to take it away?
Ivan Pudge Rodriguez.
Absolutely fantastic. Two great legends, I think. What are your thoughts on those right away? Your straightaway thoughts when you're watching the stream.
So my initial thought on Jimmy Fox was, well, first off, I love the Jimmy Fox ad because he's a dynamic power hitter. But I think my immediate thought on Jimmy Fox was it shows their willingness again to dig deep into baseball's history and go further back in time. We saw the first bit of that last year with Babe Ruth. Before Babe Ruth, most of their guys were 50s and later, right. And now we're seeing Babe Ruth. We saw Ty Cobb, Christy Mathewson, and now Jimmy Fox. That's a core four of guys that,
hell, even Willie Mays, you can say. I know he's a little bit after that, but still pretty far back.
Right. So there's four or five guys that really ended their careers, at least with those first four, before the 50s started.
Yeah, and I love that. I mean, baseball is probably the most history driven game that we have in America, I would say. And to have these legendary players from back in the day come into the game, I think, is only a good thing for the show.
Definitely. So what were your immediate thoughts when you saw Jimmy Fox?
I mean, so we should say, first off, if you didn't watch the streams, one, what are you doing? You should go watch them right now on Twitch. But if you didn't watch them, the way they revealed both these legends, they had a little maybe 20, 30-second trailer for them, and it was pretty cool. They did a little thing where they showed Jimmy Fox walking up to the plate, and you could tell he was in Fenway Park, probably a Red Sox player, but you couldn't tell who it was until you saw him swing and you saw the back of his jersey be number 3, I think, and then you could tell it was Jimmy Fox. So that was pretty cool. I really liked how they revealed it. That was definitely better than last year where they kind of just said, Jimmy Fox,
and then they show us a little screenshot. Yeah,
right. It got the hype building, I think, which was pretty cool. So that was my first thought on the stream itself. But Jimmy Fox, obviously being Red Sox fans, we gotta love that. He played for both the Red Sox and the Philadelphia Athletics and was an absolutely incredible player, no doubt. I mean, he won 3 MVPs, like they mentioned on the stream. He has one of the top slugging percentages of all time. Just an incredible player, a huge power hitter for sure, 534 home runs. And at the time of his retirement, as they mentioned on the stream.
I was just going to mention this, yeah.
Yeah, at the time of his retirement, he had the second most home runs in baseball behind just Babe Ruth. And obviously being the case, he had the most home runs by any right-handed hitter as well, which is just, I mean, it's pretty mind-boggling to think about. So an absolutely incredible player and definitely going to be a good addition.
Definitely. Going back to how they released the legends on the stream with the Jimmy Fox trailer, and then they did a similar trailer for Pudge Rodriguez, I wish they kind of hid Pudge a little bit more, because they immediately started off with showing Texas Rangers on the uniform patch, and then they showed he was a catcher.
Right,
and
so it was pretty
obvious. Put two and two together, you knew it was going to be Pudge Rodriguez. Where at least with Jimmy Fox, he wore the stirrup, so you kind of knew it was an older player. They showed Fenway Park, so you knew it was a Red Sox. But I think until it popped up with Fox,
I think
most people didn't know who the legend was,
right,
even when he was swinging, because, again, he's an older player. And even when they showed Fox, I wonder what percentage of the Twitch audience actually knew who Jimmy Fox was.
Right. And us being Red Sox fans, we obviously know Jimmy Fox from Red Sox history and things like that. But if you don't know who he is, check his baseball reference. It is a treasure trove. It's very fun to look at. But as for Pudge Rodriguez, what were your thoughts on him coming into the game at all?
My immediate thought was, thank God we got another really good catcher to use. So last year, virtually every single team that I saw either put Kyle Schwarber at catcher or had immortal Mike Piazza. And those are like really the only two options. But adding Pudge gives you another player to use.
Yeah, Pudge is a great addition. And I, like Aaron said, having more players at kind of these less skilled positions, I don't know how to word it exactly. Basically, positions that don't have a lot of great talent,
right,
behind them.
I mean, essentially, positions that are not corner outfield or corner infield.
Right. Exactly. Shortstop, second base, catcher are always nice to get extra players at. And Pudge is, I mean, he's got to be one of the top 10, 5 catchers in baseball history. Oh, so
certainly.
So, of course, a great addition. Now, we did also get a different little take on it from the devs, where they said there's going to be more than 30 new legends this year. So that's definitely interesting. Now, we know of, what, 7 now, I think?
Right. So there was 5 released in the official gameplay trailer, and then these 2.
Right, so we're at 7 now. Of course, Willie Mays being the top dog, I think. We don't need to rank them all, obviously, but a fantastic add in Willie Mays. So, but 30 new, which basically means we have at least 23 more that we're going to be announced eventually, or maybe we won't get all of them announced, and we'll see them when we first launch the game, which is pretty cool.
We saw that last year. They put in about 25 new legends last year, and we had about 15 or so that were released pre-release, and then you saw other guys like Dante Bichette and other players like Jay Buhner that we didn't know of, but then they got dropped throughout the game.
Right, so that'll be cool to see, obviously. And another interesting tidbit from the devs is they said, and this is basically verbatim, they said, and there's still more than 100 legends in the game. Now, do we want to read into that anything? I remember when I watched the stream, I thought of something, but did you think of anything on that?
I don't want to read too much into them saying still, although I could see them adopting the Madden model where they don't use the same legends every single year. Up until this year, they have. If an MLB legend was in a prior version of a game, he was in every single version since then.
Right.
That's not the same in Madden. They have a legend for 1 year. They might drop him for the next year, rotate in new guys, and then bring that legend back 2 or 3 years later. What do you think?
I think it's definitely possible, and we really don't know. And this could be us just reaching for straws and, you know, trying to wordsmith out here, but it's definitely possible that they might rotate out a few of the less popular legends and rotate in these guys that are newer and more fresh.
I guess I'll ask you, what do you prefer? Like, we've played both. We've mentioned we play both. Which right. legend model do you prefer? Do you like knowing that we're going to have Ted Williams in the game no matter what? Or do you want to see, like, hey, like, there might be a shot that he's not in the game this year, but, you know, he might be in the game the year after.
Right. I think the Ted Williams example is a good one in that I wouldn't want them to take away the top dog legends, right, where the Ted Williams, the Babe Ruths, the guys like that who are just incredible, like, all-time best players at their positions, best players in baseball history. I wouldn't want them to take those guys away. I wouldn't mind if they take away, to borrow a name you just mentioned earlier, like a Dante Bichette or a Jay Buhner. Like, if they rotate those guys out, I'm not too upset, because are they really quote-unquote legends? Not really. They are in their own right, in that they were great players in their time and they deserve, you know, the spotlight a little bit. But if they rotate out those guys in favor of guys like Pudge Rodriguez and, hey, like Rob Dibble for a year or whatever, I don't mind it as much. But if they took away guys like Ted Williams or Babe Ruth, then I think I'd have a problem with it.
Right. And I think I like the Madden model better, in the sense that you're always surprised when you get a legend in the game. Whereas right now we sort of assume that Babe Ruth is in the game. We assume that all of the past legends that we're used to relying on, Jackie Robinson, Ted Williams, those guys are in the game. I think one reason why MLB is in a good spot still to keep using that model is, like, we're going through all of these legend wish lists. There are tons of top-tier legends that they still don't have. They're not really at that 100% cap yet where you'd want to see them take legends away and bring them back, so there is a surprise or shock value in the years going forward. I don't think we're at that point yet, but we might be in the next 4 to 5 years.
Yeah, I see what you're saying, and I definitely agree. I do like the idea of rotating. It's just, can they get the big enough legend base and the strong enough legend base to actually do it?
Right, like, I think if we had Hank Aaron, if we had Barry Bonds, if we had Mickey Mantle, all of these, like, tremendous, like, top 20 to 30 players already, I would want to see them start taking legends out and then bringing them back in subsequent years.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. Now, we did obviously get those 2 Twitch streams, which we'll talk about in a little bit, but that wasn't the only piece of information we got from the MLB The Show team. Of course, every Monday, we have a GameStop Monday, which is a little 2 to 3 minute video that GameStop puts on their Twitter page. And this Monday, it was obviously about fielding and hitting, which is what basically the format of every single week is going to be. The GameStop Monday will kind of reference what happens in the stream and give you a little quick teaser for what is going to come later in the week with the stream. Now, in the GameStop Monday, for Diamond Dynasty purposes, they showed a few screenshots of basically the menus and things like that. And do you want to get into that, Aaron?
Yeah, and this is one of the things that I mentioned in a prior episode. Watch these GameStop Monday streams because they always have little nuggets in them if you slow the videos down and try to dissect them. I noticed two things from when I took two screenshots. The first being that when you're looking at the Play Now screen, so when you're going on the main menu screen, going to different game modes to play, Diamond Dynasty, Road to the Show, Franchise, one of the game modes that showed up on there was Moments. Now, we talked about last episode that we thought Moments was going to be a mode within Diamond Dynasty. This, to me, makes it seem like Moments is its own separate thing, sort of like Challenge of the Week.
Right, and it might tie into Diamond Dynasty, and I think we pretty much know it will, because in the reveal trailer, they showed the rewards being some XP, which can go to anything, and then also a stub reward, which is more or less going to be used for Diamond Dynasty purposes. So we know Moments ties in with Diamond Dynasty, but it definitely seems to be a distinct mode. But that's just from the menus. That could obviously change. Who knows? And that could have been an early menu. We really don't know. But it is an interesting factoid, I think.
Right. And we're going to have a whole new, a whole developer stream on this on February 28th. So we'll find out more information then. But it was interesting to me to see that it was on its own separate screen rather than within Diamond Dynasty. Now, the other thing I noticed was that they showed a screenshot of what the community market looks like. And what I mean is the main screen in Diamond Dynasty that's labeled community market, and then it has all of the different types of things you can buy on the market. So in the past, it's MLB cards, it's souvenirs, it's sponsorships, things like that. One thing that's new on this screen that I saw was a new thing called unlockables. What the heck are those?
I honestly have no idea, and I'm not even going to try to speculate because, I mean, we really don't know. I mean, they still had souvenirs on there, right? They still had sponsorships.
They had everything. They had everything that they had in the past.
Right, and then just added unlockables. So it really could be anything. Like, I really don't know. It might be, like, basically the equivalent of achievements or trophies.
Right.
We really don't know. But it'll be interesting to see, especially because it was basically the same size as all the other ones, right? It didn't seem like it was any less important.
Right, it didn't seem like it was any more important, didn't seem like it was any less important.
Right. So we'll see. That one's just an interesting little bit.
Yeah, and there was some so I tweeted out both of these images on Monday, or last Monday, a week ago at this point. And there was some speculation in my messages that could be like a replacement for the ticket counter. I don't know. That doesn't sound feasible to me, but it could be.
Yeah, it definitely could be, but we'll see. I'm sure we'll find out in the Diamond Dynasty stream, I think, in early March. So I guess let's hop into it with the actual streams they had this past week. First one up was the fielding stream, basically breaking down everything that they tried to overhaul in terms of the fielding engine and player urgency and things like that. Was there any one thing that kind of jumped out to you that was like a big change?
So I think the biggest thing for me sort of hit on one of my biggest frustrations this year, and that was rocket balls off the wall. And then in connection with that, when you're fielding those, you have no idea where they were going. So they added a thing that they're calling the ball off the wall ribbons. So when you're fielding with somebody, it's going to show you that the ball's going to go off the wall. And then depending on how good of a fielder they are, you're going to see sort of the trajectory of the ball, where it goes and where it's going to bounce.
Right. And I love that. And they mentioned, obviously, it depends on how good your fielder is. If he had a zero fielding rating, he wouldn't have any ribbon. And if he had a 99, he'd have the full ribbon showing exactly the path of the ball. And obviously anywhere in between, you have a little bit of a shorter ribbon and to try to figure out where the ball's going. I think it's a huge addition. I hated that so much this past year. You'd have balls going off the wall in Fenway Park or maybe Colorado, and you just get weird bounces and you wouldn't know where the ball's going. And before you know it, they got a triple or an inside the park home run on something that should have just been a double.
Right. I mean, how many inside the park home runs do you think you gave up just solely because you couldn't figure out where to position your fielder?
Oh, not only did I give up, not only did I give up a ton, I probably scored a bunch of them too. Like,
right.
And I feel bad, but I'm not going to not take a free run. You know what I mean? Who's not going to keep running when the fielder's running after the ball for a mile when the ball goes past them? So it's a huge addition to the game. I love it. And I really hope it actually does work correctly. And I also hope it actually scales the right way, where if your guy has maybe like a 30 or 40 fielding rating, he doesn't really see it that well,
right,
because
he shouldn't know. He
right.
shouldn't really know where the ball's going to go.
Right. And so that way, but at least there'd be some indication, right, of where the ball is going, so you can at least have an idea and you can get him more or less in position where he's not just running like a chicken with his head cut off trying to find this ball.
So I think one thing that as I think about this more, we're people that play this game a ton. I'm sure that once players start playing the game a lot, they can sort of predict where the balls are going to be going, even if they have just a very short trail. I wonder if a better way to do this ribbon thing was to have the would be to have the ribbon move back and forth a little bit, kind of like how Madden does with kicking. Like so, like it'll move a little bit depending on how good or bad your kicker is.
Right.
I think that might be a better way to do it. Just so like as you keep playing it, you can't be able to predict it on your own.
Yeah, even if you have a bad fielder, right? I think that actually makes a lot of sense. So if you have a really good fielder, maybe it doesn't move almost
at
all.
It's going to be in place, and it's going to have the full ribbon.
Right, but if you have a bad fielder, it's going to be wobbling everywhere. And so you have an idea of where it's going, but you don't have the perfect idea. So I think that's a good call, and maybe that could be something the devs could look into. Another thing they mentioned with off-the-wall stuff is they mentioned how they actually went in and kind of updated the code and made it so balls off the wall will hopefully, ideally, right? This is impossible to know right away. But hopefully, they'll kind of mimic the actual surface of the wall that they hit. So if they hit a padded wall, they'll kind of die a little bit more. And if they hit like a brick wall or something like that, or maybe like the green monster, they'll actually bump off like really hard because that's what would happen, right?
Right.
So I think that's really interesting. That remains to be seen. They only showed a couple clips of it, so it's kind of hard to say if whether or not, you know, it's actually going to work well. But I did like that they mentioned it, and it's a nice addition, I think.
Yeah, I think it remains to be seen how effective it is, but it's nice that they touched on it and actually brought it to our attention as something that they are proud of, that they think that they have addressed.
Yeah, no doubt. They also talked a lot about out of position, like downsides and debuffs and stuff, and I thought it was interesting, but at the same time, I didn't really think that there was much out of the norm. I already felt that there was a pretty steep penalty for playing somebody out of position. Yeah, every once in a while you could make a play with like a catcher playing shortstop, but for the most part, they were very slow in the field. They made bad throws a lot. The throw accuracy meter was very difficult with them. So it's nice that they mentioned it and that they, you know, said that they addressed it. But I don't know. What do you think? I didn't really think it added much.
I mean, for the amount of time that they spent talking about it, I don't think it added virtually anything to what we had already seen in the game. Yeah, they might have added like on the margins, but it wasn't noticeable. Like you said, like if you put a catcher at shortstop, he was going to make mistakes. He wasn't going to field the ball as urgently as a normal shortstop would.
Right.
I am far more interested in putting guys at secondary positions and seeing the drop-off there. Like putting Immortal George Brett at shortstop.
Right.
Putting Immortal Chipper Jones at shortstop. Like these guys are third basemen. They shouldn't be making routine plays at short. Or
right.
Not routine. They shouldn't be making incredible plays at shortstop.
Yeah, and they did show a little bit of that with the button accuracy changes that they made, which I thought was nice. There's a much wider range of what you can get. So I think the example they showed that I remember correctly was they showed Andrelton Simmons at shortstop, obviously one of the top shortstops in the league, defensively at least, and his throw meter was really big. It was really easy to get a green throw, as it should be in my opinion. And then they put Zach Cozart, who's the third baseman for the Angels, at short, and he has a secondary at shortstop, so he can play there. And his throw meter was noticeably different. It was still relatively easy to get a green throw, but it was definitely a lot more difficult than it was with Simmons. And so I like that. I hope that kind of carries over with all the secondary position guys, because in my opinion, you should be able to play them there, but you also should expect a little bit of a downgrade in their defensive abilities.
Right.
So I definitely like that. Now,
one other thing that they talked about was their general philosophy of using players out of position. And they used an example of like a 99 rated shortstop, how they sort of assume that a 99 rated shortstop could play a competent first base, whereas they don't assume that a 99 first baseman could play a competent shortstop. What are your general thoughts on that?
I didn't really understand what they meant by that. And you kind of have to watch the stream to get the full feel of what we mean when we say that. But
so I think what I took it to mean is like, when you take a guy and put him completely out of position, so like for the 99 shortstop, he doesn't have secondary as first base. But if you stick him at first base, I think what they mean is that there's a sort of a sliding scale on how his fielding attributes are going to decrease. And this 99 shortstop's fielding attributes are not going to decrease at the same rate as the 99 first baseman going to shortstop. Like that 99 first baseman going to shortstop is going to be much, much worse at shortstop than the 99 shortstop would be at first base.
Right, and I understand the logic of it, especially from a baseball perspective. I think it makes sense, but at the same time, we're not playing real baseball. We're playing a video game after all, so I'm not sure if I really like that. I don't really want people able to play a ton of guys out of position like crazy. I don't mind it if you're playing offline or whatever. That's cool with me, especially if you're grinding missions.
Right, and you need to do it to grind missions.
Right, which I'll do all day long, but I don't want it to be a thing where online there becomes like this meta where all the really athletic players are played all the time and they're really fast, right, and they can play any position.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's really what they meant, but I just don't really know why they mentioned it at all.
Yeah, I mean, I think from a video game standpoint and a Diamond Dynasty, like what I would like to see teams look like, I think I would just rather them not allow, like the game just physically not allow you to play a guy at a position that is not his primary or his secondary. Just take the option completely away. It's a video game. It's not real baseball. It's a video game.
Well, I think that's where I disagree with you on it is exactly for what you just said. It's a video game. If people want to play shortstops at first and outfielders, I mean, I guess, at catcher, then they could be my guest. I just don't want them to be good at it. You know what I mean?
I see what you're saying, but I think because we're having this conversation like 4 years down the line of them instituting primary positions and secondary positions and out of positions, it means to me that like they can't figure out what the best formula is because people abuse it every single year. So if you can't figure out the formula for what's right, just take the option away.
Yeah, I hear you on that. I think I disagree though, but I do understand it. But let's keep rolling through these fielding things. Another one that they mentioned was double play urgency. They showed this a lot with shortstops. Receiving the ball from the second baseman and then making a quick throw. They showed a ton of different animations, and I was very impressed by it personally. I thought there was a lot going on there, mostly from an animation perspective, and that's where you kind of need to watch the stream and kind of understand that, I think. What do you think about the double play stuff they showed?
I like it. I think the word that they used the most in that stream was efficiency, and that was the one word that they want the people to take away when looking at MLB The Show defensively this year, is just efficiency. Getting rid of dead time from fielders, waiting for the ball, or waiting to throw the ball. Like, that's the biggest thing to me in this double play urgency. Like, they recorded tons of new animations, so they say, to increase the efficiency of both fielding the ball beforehand, tossing the ball for a double play, and then the second guy catching the ball, and then immediately going into a throw.
Yeah, no doubt. I think it's definitely a welcome change. I'll be interested to see how it plays out when we actually get our hands on the game, but I think it was nice that they showed it at all. So, what else we got?
So, the next thing I want to talk about is stealing cheese. I'm sure you've noticed, if you played any amount of online this year, if you're pitching and they've got a fast runner, you go to slide step or you pitch out, the guy is stealing, and then he immediately goes back to first base. It's the most annoying thing to me because that doesn't happen in real life. No. Ever. Like, and I know I just talked about how I'd rather not see people play out of position because, like, this is a video game and they can do that. Like, I get that. I don't want that part of the video game to be in this video game.
Well, because it's annoying. I think that's why. It's frustrating when you do everything correctly, right? You pitch out or you slide step correctly and you get them off guard and they're stealing and you should have them out by a mile, right, at second base, or at least have a good chance to get them if they're really fast.
And I think part of
my reason...
And
then they just go back to first.
Right, and part of my reason, too, is as a pitcher, when you choose to slide step or you choose to pitch out, you're sacrificing something. Slide steps, like, your pitches are not as effective. Pitch outs, you're conceding a ball. So you're giving up something to try to take away or counter an aspect. But if a guy can just go to second base or start stealing, notice that it's a slide step or pitch out, and then immediately go back to first, it defeats the whole purpose.
Right. And what's good is that in the stream, they showed that every once in a while, at least, that if you try to do that, your player might stumble, he might slip, he might not have a good turn when he tries to go back to first base. So I really do like that.
Yeah, so both of those sort of go into their tag and branching throw animations too, because they showed a pitch out where the catcher threw down to second base and then the shortstop caught it and then immediately threw to first. Even sometimes you'd see them throw down to second base, the shortstop try to tag somebody that's not even there, wait a second, and then throw it back to first. So I think if they eliminate that, like, there's a chance where you can actually throw the guy out at first base after throwing it to second if he stumbled and tried to go back.
Right, and at the very least, just the knowledge that that feature is in the game might make people less inclined to actually try that, you know, cheese. So I like it a lot. As with everything, though, it remains to be seen until we really get our hands on the game.
That's right.
Now, final thing they talked about, and it kind of ties in with everything here, especially with efficiency, is that they showed a lot of branching animations, things like catching the ball and instantly getting into a throw right away. And this,
and even setting yourself up the field, keeping in mind of where you need to throw the ball too.
Right, exactly. So that one is also really difficult to explain, especially without video. So I highly recommend you watch the stream if you haven't. But I liked it a lot. It just showing, just, I know we keep saying it, but the efficiency in fielding I think is really nice. It's always frustrating when you have a fielder that is just like waiting on a ball, waiting, and then a guy that has like 60 speed beats out what should have been a routine ground out. So overall, I really liked what they showed in the fielding stream.
Oh, one thing we didn't mention. Guys in the outfield with bad defense, they're going to get bad jumps.
Yeah, you're right about that. I forgot.
So I think that is really important from a Diamond Dynasty perspective, because who was one of the most popular guys we saw on teams all season?
JD Martinez.
That's like, who it was. He's a... Like, we are Red Sox fans. He is a below-average fielder. There's many times...
He stinks in the field.
There were many times last year where he had bad jumps on balls, and it almost cost the Red Sox a game.
Hell, in the World Series, he completely lost the ball in right field and didn't know where the hell it was.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, and that probably won't happen in the game, but I do like that they have features now where a guy with, you know, subpar fielding is going to make mistakes in the field. He's going to take bad routes to the ball and stuff like that. So I really do think that's going to help a lot. But it also is going to be very interesting because there's no DH, obviously, in Diamond Dynasty. How is that going to affect players like JD? Is it going to be so strong that any fly ball to him is going to be a really difficult play? Or is it only going to happen maybe once a game or once every five games or something like that? It remains to be seen.
Right. It definitely remains to be seen. But I like the idea that they're essentially making players equal to what they are in real life. Like, there should be a penalty for playing JD Martinez in the outfield or needing to play JD Martinez in the outfield because you want to get his bat in the lineup. You should feel that repercussion in some way, and you never felt it in MLB 18. Like, the only thing that affected you on defense was speed.
Yeah, that's definitely for sure. You got anything else on fielding before we move on to the hitting stream, though?
I think the one lasting takeaway, we mentioned a couple times, and it holds true for the hitting stream as well. All of this looks great on paper, but they're showing us the best of the best that they have. It remains to be seen how it actually works, how often it works, how effective it is in-game, and we just can't make those judgments until we actually play the game, and we actually play the game a lot.
Right, and things like this are going to be exploitable eventually when people figure out how to, you know, manipulate things. So it's... Nothing's ever going to be perfect, and that's what I always try to tell myself, especially when I get one of these like BS animations that annoys me or something. I try to be like, okay, step back and think. It works correctly most of the time, and that's the goal. So hopefully that's what happens, but like Aaron said, we will have to wait and see when we actually get our hands on the game. So let's hop right into the hitting stream. This one, at least in my opinion, was a little bit less involved and had a little bit less information than the fielding stream. I feel like they showed a ton in the fielding stream, and then they kind of just showed a little bit in the hitting stream and talked a bunch. But what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, that kind of worries me too, because hitting, at least in the community's, general community's perspective this past year, hitting was the primary issue. Fielding, the changes they made to fielding were nice changes. I don't know if they were absolutely needed. I think hitting, though, needed a bit of an overhaul, and I don't know if they got too in-depth or... talked enough about the changes that we should be seeing in MLB 19.
Yeah, they didn't really talk a ton about specific changes to how, you know, swing paths happen and PCI and things like that, but they did focus a lot on contact hitters, which I did like. Now, they showed a bunch of different hit types, which I thought was good. They showed a few different hit types where you could get actual line drive based hits in front of outfielders, which I definitely didn't think was very common in MLB The Show 18. They showed hard ground balls getting through the infield, which was also very difficult.
I think what I really wanted to see, but they didn't show, was a ground ball in an online play between the shift.
Right.
Which you almost never saw online this patch. You might see it in the computer, like playing against the computer. I cannot remember the last time I got a ground ball hit with a lefty through the shift.
Right.
Even like a hard ground ball hit.
Which, I mean, it kind of makes sense a little bit because that's the purpose of the shift. But at the same time, it does happen in real life. And it's, I would say, fairly common that that can happen where guy smokes a ball and it just gets past the second baseman. But in the show, I definitely agree with you. I don't think that really ever happened in the show 18. So,
but yeah, back to going talking about contact guys. I really like this. I like that they're focusing on contact guys. But I'm very, very wary because in the pre-release streams last year, we were told that in MLB 18, contact hitters would be the most important that they've ever been in any MLB in the past. Guess what the game actually was? It was the exact opposite.
Yeah, it was a power fest everywhere. If you didn't have 80 plus power at a position, you were doing it wrong. So as with everything, we keep saying it. We just want to drill it home. Just wait until the game comes out to get too excited about things that they talk about. It's nice to hear. It's better than hearing nothing, right? But we don't want to get too overwhelmed and too hyped up and then just to be disappointed later on. So just keep those expectations kind of tempered. And we'll see where we go when the game actually comes out.
So again, when I talked about J.D. Martinez in the outfield, it's sort of the same. My biggest takeaway on focusing on contact hitters is the same thing. We're going to see more lineup diversity. Assuming this is true, that contact hitters are actually playable this year, we're going to see people more apt to use guys like Ichiro, assuming he's back in the game, and Tony Gwynn and Rod Carew, and less of the, I don't know, Joey Gallo types.
Right. The all power, no anything else. Right. So I definitely like that. Now, they also mentioned a lot about pitchers in this, and I guess it makes sense. Even though it was the hitting stream, they do go hand in hand. And that one of the biggest things that I took away was that if you try to spam your secondary pitches with pitchers, and obviously most pitchers' secondary pitches are off speed, if you try to spam those, they'll actually get kind of worse as you keep pitching with them. So I think the example they use is if your like square pitch was like a splitter, let's say, and you threw it 5, 6, 7 times in a row. After that 5, 6, 7 times, it's going to be much more difficult to locate that pitch and to actually have it be as effective as it was the first time you threw it, which I definitely like, I think. But what do you think?
Yeah, I think I like the aspect, but I really wonder how it's going to play out in a head-to-head mode. So say your third pitch is a changeup, and just going back to the meta of this past year, you're pounding low changeups, and the guy you're playing can't lay off of them, and he's swinging at every single one. Does that mean that like you are going to be penalized because you're throwing 10 changeups in a row, the other guy can't hit them, but you're bound to hang one because you're just throwing a ton in a row? Like, I don't like that, and I don't know if they didn't really get too deep into it, but it sounded like, to me at least, that if you threw 10 changeups in a row, no matter what the results were from the batter, if he swung and missed at balls in the dirt, like you were bound to lose effectiveness, even if you had thrown 10 strikes in a row.
Right, and I think that's definitely something, like we keep saying, that we just got to wait and see when the game actually comes out. How does that feature actually come into play? Does it truly make you miss pitches completely, or does it just make them a little bit worse? We really don't know, but I do like that it's an option that they have and are able to kind of implement. Now, the last thing they talked about, at least that I had a note on, was that pitch speeds now are going to scale with difficulty. So they're going to be pretty slow on like a rookie difficulty.
Well, they've always scaled with difficulty. They're just increasing the
scale overall.
The scale, yeah.
I see. Okay, so basically the rookie will have the slowest pitch speeds, obviously being the lowest difficulty, all the way up to legendary, which will have, or Hall of Fame, whichever one's the top. I think it's legendary.
Legendary, yeah.
Which will have the highest pitch speeds, and that goes along with ranked seasons. They mentioned how in World Series you're going to be playing with the highest pitch speeds, and I think that's really interesting. I really wish they did that last year. I think I mentioned it on one of our podcasts then, and I'm just glad that it's actually coming to the game now.
Yeah, it's interesting to me that they're making the change for this year, where, like, we talked about this off air, like, they knew that pitch speed was an issue, like, March 30th last year. Like, what took them so long? Were they just collecting data all this time? But regardless, I like the fact that they're making the change. They're making pitches harder to hit. Hopefully, they're making fastballs great again. And they're actually usable.
Yeah, exactly.
For it's got to be usable. Pitches.
Yeah, I mean, so, I don't know about you. I was terrified to throw fastballs online.
Like, oh, yeah. No, you never would.
I would always wait until they had a guy like a Rod Carew, a Tony Gwynn, somebody that I could pretty reasonably assured is not going to hit a home run. And that's when I'd throw my first fastball, and I'd see, can they time it, especially if I have a guy that throws like 99 or 100. And if they time it, you know, good or early, I'm probably not going to throw a fastball the rest of the game.
Right. That was generally my approach as well.
Which I don't like that, because if we're being honest, real baseball, fastballs are thrown 50%, 60%, 70% of the time. That's easily the most predominant pitch. And yeah. I'm not saying it has to mimic real baseball. We already got into this a little bit earlier. But it should kind of be relevant, right? Where fastballs are a very important pitch in real baseball, but how can they be basically completely
right,
banished?
They're the most common pitch in real baseball, yet they're virtually non-existent at a high level of MLB The Show.
Right, and I think with the scaling of pitch speeds, hopefully that will be kind of solved a little bit.
So one issue that I think we might run into with scaling of pitch speeds, especially in Diamond Dynasty ranked seasons and Battle Royale, is because matchmaking is not exact, like if you're in Championship Series, you're not guaranteed to face somebody in Championship Series. You might face somebody in World Series, you might face somebody in Division Series or lower. How is the game going to set the pitch speed? Like that's an issue to me. And I know I saw a little banter on Twitter. Nick Livingston, one of the developers who was actually talking on the developer stream, was talking with community members about this, and it looks to me like they still aren't decided on how they're going to resolve that issue. Nick pointed out he might average it. So if one guy's on Championship Series and one guy's on Division Series, they'd average the two speeds. Somebody, I think Mills Gaming TV, suggested that whoever's the home team, that person's pitch speed controls. I think it's a very interesting issue that I'd like to see played out a little bit more. What do you think?
I don't really know if I have an opinion on it, but I would like them to address it, and hopefully they do in either the Diamond Dynasty stream or a blog, at least somewhere where how we know how it's calculated. Whenever they determine that, I'd just like to know, right?
Yeah, and one way to combat it to some degree, assuming that this feature is still in MLB 19, is you can hold the L stick down when you're choosing an opponent in ranked seasons to keep your matchmaking window at the same rating level. So maybe that's a way to counter it, to sort of ensure that you're going to get a pitch speed that's similar to what you've been working off of currently.
Yeah, definitely a good point. Hopefully that is how it works. So I think that pretty much covers both the streams. There wasn't too much, like we said, from a Diamond Dynasty pure perspective, but a lot gameplay-wise, and I highly recommend you check those out if you didn't catch them earlier last week. So you get to hop to AL Central Legends that we want?
Let's do it.
All right, you can take it away with the Chicago White Sox.
All right, Chicago White Sox. I'm going to throw it back way, way back to about 100 years ago. Actually, 100 years on the dot from when this guy was banned from baseball for life, and that's Shoeless Joe Jackson, part of the Chicago Black Sox scandal. Just a tremendous player. And in baseball history, he's one of these like mythical figures that there's been books and movies all about the Black Sox scandal, and whether or not Shoeless Joe, who was the face of the White Sox at the time, whether or not he was actually part of this fix of the World Series, of the 1919 World Series. I think evidence shows lately that he wasn't involved at all and therefore shouldn't have been banned from baseball. He's not in the Hall of Fame because of his ban, but he's just one of these like tremendous figures in baseball history. An incredible hitter. I'm looking at some of his stats right now. He has a career 940 OPS with a 170 OPS plus. Like a great hitter, would be a great addition to the show. But
yeah, no
given
doubt.
Given his lifetime ban on baseball, I'm not sure if he would be in an MLB official licensed product.
Right. Probably unlikely, but it would be really cool. Now, mine for the AL Central, the Chicago White Sox, I should say, is going to be Mark Burley, who really is... I know it might sound crazy because the name Mark Burley, at least to me, doesn't scream, you know, legend, right?
Right.
But this guy accumulated 59.3 career WAR, pretty darn good. And it really is not a stretch to say he's one of the best players in Chicago White Sox history. It really is not. He was incredible
with
them.
This is a franchise that's been around for more than 100 years.
Right, obviously with Shoeless Joe playing back in the 19-teens with them. So, but Mark Burley, 3.83 career ERA with the Chicago White Sox. Obviously not crazy good, but also pretty solid. I mean, 383 is a serviceable pitcher. Definitely a good guy to have on the mound. Always an innings eater. Led the league in innings multiple times and pitched over 200 innings almost every year in his career except for his rookie season and his final year. So that's pretty impressive right there alone. He made a few different All-Star teams, won a handful of gold gloves, if it means anything to you for a pitcher.
Did he throw a perfect game?
He did throw a perfect game, yeah. And
did he have a perfect game and a no-hitter, I think?
Did he throw both? I'm not sure, but he definitely threw a perfect game with that Dwayne Wise catch that I always remember. That was crazy. So Mark Burley, he would just be a cool addition. He wouldn't be, you know, the crazy tip-top legend that we've seen with like Willie Mays or Jim Fox or anything, but he would be a nice little add, and I think a lot of White Sox fans, especially around our age, would appreciate that.
Yeah, agreed. Who you got for the Cleveland Indians?
So for the Cleveland Indians, this is a guy who is a Hall of Famer, no doubt, and he actually is in the Hall of Fame. I'm not just saying he's a Hall of Famer, and that would be Jim Thome. Over 600 career home runs, 612. I mean, obviously just a complete beast, first baseman. May or may not have done steroids. Who knows? It's possible. We're not going to speculate too much on that. But a career 956 OPS, just an incredible career. And like I said, over 600 home runs. Only a few handful of baseball players can say that. Jim Thome would be an awesome addition and another great power hitter.
Hold on, can we look at his 2002 season? He finished 7th in the MVP. Can you just read that stat line off?
Yeah, so he hit 304 with a 445 on base, 677 slugging, and a 112 OPS. Or sorry, 1122 OPS, which is mind-boggling. Crazy, crazy nasty stats. And like Aaron said, finished 7th in MVP.
He hit 52 home runs.
Yeah, I don't know how he finished 7th in MVP. I could see somebody having a better year because it wasn't like an insane year, but it was a really good year. So finishing 7th, there must have been a crazy crop of AL players that year.
Definitely.
So who you got for the Indians?
All right. For the Indians, I'm going to go with a guy that probably means more to baseball history than he does to Cleveland Indians history. And definitely means more to Black baseball history than certainly he does to the Cleveland Indians. And that's Satchel Paige. One of the iconic pitchers of the Negro Leagues, played a couple years with the Cleveland Indians, let me just double check this. Yeah, he's a 41-year-old rookie for the Cleveland Indians in 1948. I think he would be a great addition to MLB The Show and really open the younger audience up even further to how the Negro Leagues had an impact on Major League Baseball.
Yeah, Satchel Paige, an absolute legend. That would be an awesome addition. And if they did do like a Satchel Paige or something like that, I really hope that they could somehow get the rights to like use his Negro League stats somehow. I'm not even sure how that works, but that would be really cool because obviously he was pretty old when he pitched in the major leagues due to obviously a lot of segregation and, you know, the division between baseball players and Jackie Robinson, of course, kind of remedying that. But Satchel Paige means a lot, like Aaron said, and he would be an awesome addition to the game. So next up, we have the Detroit Tigers. You want to take that first?
Let's do it. So I talked on the, I think, Milwaukee Brewers about how I wanted to see Prince Fielder.
Yep.
The Detroit Tigers.
You got Prince Fielder for the Tigers, too?
I don't have Prince Fielder. I've got his dad. I've got Cecil Fielder. The reason I've got Cecil Fielder, partially because the Detroit Tigers, despite being a very storied franchise, like, don't have a ton of, like, legend names that I really want to see.
Right, that we don't already have. Now, and the number one definitely would have been Ty Cobb, but
we just got him.
Just got him, so we can't mention him here.
Right, so let's go with Cecil Fielder. Hopefully they bring father and son back in the game. Would be a dynamic offensive duo. This guy in 1990 and 1991 led the majors in home runs, hitting 51 and 90 and 44 and 91. So I think he'd be a fun guy to add, hopefully alongside his son, Prince Fielder.
I was going to say, if they have both of them, not only are they going to be a force on offense, they're going to be a force at the dinner table too. So do not count them short.
I think Vlad and Vlad Jr. might give them a run for their money.
Vlad Jr. has been looking pretty thick at spring training. So
THICC.
Yeah, he's thick. Been looking like a big boy, but we'll get into that probably when we get to the AL East maybe. So mine for the Detroit Tigers is also a guy who's not really known as a Tigers player, even though he played the majority of his career there, 12 seasons out of his 17. But he's obviously known for one of the most iconic moments in baseball history, I'd probably say. And that would be Kurt Gibson, of course, with his home run in the World Series.
I can't believe what I just saw.
Aaron with a perfect.
I can't believe what I just saw.
Just keep it going, please, for us. So Kurt Gibson, obviously, like I said, most known, at least in my view, as a Dodger because of that one moment, right? And he also did win an MVP in 1988 with the Dodgers. But he played a ton of seasons, 12, like I said, with Detroit. He had a pretty good career there, 273 batting average with an 834 OPS. A very solid player, never really a stud except for that 1988 season, like I said, where he won MVP. Never actually made an All-Star team, which is pretty interesting. Did win MVP, like I said, and the Silver Slugger in that 1988 season. And he'd be really cool. I mean, obviously having the story behind him with the walk-off home run off Dennis Eckersley would be really cool. But being a Tigers player, I think he'd be a nice little addition.
I think he would, too. He kind of reminds me of, like, Keith Hernandez. And we got Keith Hernandez this past year, so I think Kirk Gibson is definitely within the realm of possibility. I'm not sure how playable he would be on top-tier teams in Diamond Dynasty, but he would be a nice add, especially because of the history that he has with the game.
Yeah, no doubt. So next up, we have the Kansas City Royals, and I'm going to take this one first, and I think this might be probably the coolest legend to get of this year. Willie Mays is incredible, but if we got this guy, he'd probably be the most hyped legend, I think.
Who's that?
That would be none other than Bo Jackson.
Okay.
Bo knows.
So Bo is like one of the community's most wanted legends, which is pretty incredible to me.
Oh, considering it's insane.
Like, he doesn't have like that great of an MLB career.
No, I mean, he was okay. He was fine in the MLB, but obviously the kind of mythical creature that is Bo Jackson, the fact that he was such a dominant athlete that he was able to play at a high level in baseball and football and played both sports at basically the same time, was incredible. He actually had a pretty good year in 1989, made his only All-Star team, and also finished 10th in MVP voting with a little over an 800 OPS. Had 32 home runs that season, too. I mean, the guy hit 141 career home runs. That's, jeez, that's not too shabby in eight seasons. That's an average of 33 a year. Well, average of 33 over 162 game average, I should say. So a little bit lower than that per year. But, I mean, this guy, he was not bad. Like, he was definitely not a bad baseball player. Career 784 OPS. A solid guy, and he would just be really fun to use.
And I think I actually think he's a obtainable legend because he was just added to Madden like three years ago.
Yeah.
And he's been a mainstay ever since. I think if MLB The Show reached out to him and wanted to get him in the game, like, that would be feasible. But if they added Bo Jackson, the one animation that they would need to add is if he struck out, that he broke his bat over his knee. I need to see that.
Oh, yeah. I honestly wasn't even thinking of that, although I do love it, the breaking the bat over the knee. That's fantastic. I was thinking of when he ran up on the wall.
Oh, yeah.
In Kansas City, he basically became Spider-Man for like a few minutes there, or a few seconds, I should say. And he just kind of runs on the wall for 3-4 steps and then goes back to being a normal human being. So Bo Jackson is just something else.
He would definitely be a fun ad.
So who you got for the Royals?
All right, So we just talked about a guy that we think is one of the community's most wanted legends, just from a pure legends most wanted standpoint. This guy that I'm going to pick is a recently retired player that is one of the community's favorite legends of all time, or favorite flashbacks that they've had in MLB The Show of all time, and that's Carlos Beltran. Like, his, I know I'm gonna call out his postseason run with the Houston Astros. I know I'm picking him for the Kansas City Royals, but his Houston Astros flashback was routinely one of the best cards, an endgame card in MLB The Show Diamond Dynasty for like a solid 2 to 3 year stretch. So I want to see Carlos Beltran in the game, not to mention the fact that like he's a great person.
Oh, no doubt.
Like, from everything I've ever heard about him, I hated him when he was on the Yankees just because he was on the Yankees, but I didn't want to hate him because he seemed so likable.
Right. Yeah, great guy, and probably a Hall of Famer, if we're being honest.
I think so.
Definitely going to be close. I mean, well,
he's got close to 70 career WAR.
I mean, that's pretty damn good. So, a great player and a great guy as well. So, he would be really nice to see in the game. Now, next up, and the final one for this episode, is the Minnesota Twins. You want to take that one first?
Let's do it. And you mentioned Bo Jackson, Spider-Man. I'm going to go with a guy who's actually nicknamed Spider-Man, apparently, from what we looked up.
According to Baseball Reference.
According to Baseball Reference. And that's Torii Hunter. And maybe Torii Hunter got the nickname Spider-Man from his 2002 All-Star Game home run robbery of Barry Bonds.
Just a sick play. Look it up if you don't know what we're talking about. Just incredible.
It was Torii Hunter's first ever All-Star Game. He was 26 years old. The year after Barry Bonds broke the home run record, first inning of the All-Star Game, Bonds hits a shot to right center field. Torii Hunter is racing from, like, it looked like left center field, essentially.
Yeah.
Goes up in one motion, robs the home run, comes down, Bonds just has a huge smile on his face and gives Torrey Hunter like a bear hug, lifts him up on the ground afterwards. But I want to see Torrey Hunter in the game. A good right-handed bat would have like 99 fielding stats.
Easily have great fielding stats and also would be serviceable at the plate, no doubt.
Mine
for the Minnesota Twins is a guy who really had one of the most incredible runs I think I've ever seen from a guy in like an 8 to 9 year stretch that I can remember personally watching, and that would be Johan Santana. From 2002 to 2010, this guy had a 2.90 ERA. I mean, that's just insane. An 8 year stretch of a 2.90 ERA.
Right. Was it a 3.27 FIP or something?
Yeah. So just an insane stat line for this guy. Look up his Baseball Reference if you haven't before. It is a treasure trove. He won Cy Young twice, finished top five a handful of other times, finished in MVP voting a few times as well. Definitely just an incredible career he had. Unfortunately, cut short. I mean, he really just had that peak of 2002 to 2010. Didn't play in 2011 due to injuries. And then 2012, just didn't really have it with a 4.85 ERA. And after that, he retired and was gone from baseball. So yeah, he really fell off the map pretty quickly, but he had an incredible run.
I think he's falling off the Hall of Fame ballot this year, which is a travesty to me.
Yeah, it's a shame. Especially, I mean, I understand it. They want longevity for players to be in the Hall of Fame, and I get it. But at the same time, we have guys like Sandy Koufax, who a lot of people consider one of the best pitchers of all time. He's in the Hall of Fame, but Johan doesn't even really get much of a chance. So, yeah.
Well, you know, if Harold Baines can get in the Hall of Fame eventually, I'm sure Johan's got a shot.
Yeah, and I think he should have a shot eventually on one of these committees that they have every once in a while. But we'll see. But he was absolutely incredible with the Twins and also would have a pretty damn good card on the Mets as well. He won a Cy Young there as well as one with the Twins. So that are our picks for most wanted AL Central Legends. Obviously, next week we'll do AL East, and that'll be it. We'll have covered all the divisions, and hopefully they don't reveal any of our choices next week. We'll see.
They took away Jimmy Fox for us. But right. I don't know if we were going to pick Jimmy Fox for the Red Sox anyways.
Who knows? We hadn't even gotten there yet, but we'll see. But you want to break down real quick what's going on this week in developer content that we're seeing?
Sure. So this podcast obviously dropped on Monday the 18th. So if you're listening on Monday, we've got a GameStop Monday video coming today. If you're listening after Monday, go back, go to GameStop's Twitter page, find the GameStop Monday video. It's going to be talking, hopefully, we think, about Road to the Show, because that's what the developer stream is on Thursday the 21st. That stream is going to be at 6 p.m. Pacific time. If you're
3 p.m. Pacific time.
3 p.m. Pacific time, 6 p.m. Eastern time. Thank you. So if you're a Road to the Show player, you're going to want to watch that. We're probably going to break down a little bit of that next stream. Obviously going to talk about the legend that they reveal on that stream.
Yeah, for sure. So obviously we talk a ton about Diamond Dynasty here, but we'll at least delve a little bit into Road to the Show, especially if they have a lot of big changes like it seems to indicate that they do. And obviously they're going to reveal a new legend as well. So we'll definitely be here talking about that next week as well. So that's about it for us. There are 36 days, guys, until MLB The Show 19 launches. Get excited, get hyped, and get ready, because it's going to be a fun year, I'm sure. But that's about it for us. Thank you guys for listening. Hope you enjoyed. And if you did, follow us on Twitter at MLB The Show Cast. Of course, you can follow me at XWhatTheMoose and follow Aaron at AaronPlaysMLB. But that's all the time we got today. Got anything else, Aaron?
All else I have to say is leave us a review on podcast. I think we're sitting at like 2 reviews right now. We need more reviews.
Hit us with those 5 stars and let us know what you think, of course, on Apple Podcasts and on Twitter as well. But thank you guys for listening. Hope you have a good day. We'll see you later.